It's Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. Shortly after 1:30 in the afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. Jets Bruins gets underway at 6 o'clock tonight with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty. Rick Ralph has the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless follow us live from the Grey Cup here at 3 o'clock.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the program from the Canadian Press. He's Chris Johnston. Chris, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Chris, let's start with sort of the news that's coming out of the Markham, Ontario region about the possibility of a new arena going up there. Can you walk us through what is being proposed and the feasibility surrounding that project?
Sure. I'll do my best based on what's known so far. And basically what that is that there's a plan now to build a stadium, a 20,000-seat stadium, in Markham here, just north of Toronto. And I mean, not a lot is being said about the feasibility part in terms of who's going to pay for it, because it's estimated to cost $300 million, and it's unclear sort of whether it's the city putting up a lot of that money or governments, or whether it's going to be private funding. But, you know, I think that they're, at this point, they're doing it. You know, they think that they can make enough money just, you know, with the concert industry and things like that. And I think they do have an eye on maybe one day being a potential place for the NHL. But, you know, that's not happening in the next 2 or 3 years or anything. I think it's a longer-term venture for that.
Chris, you recently wrote about St. John's and the return of the AHL to St. John's. Can you speak a bit about that and maybe the surprise at how successful the return has been?
Sure. I mean, maybe we shouldn't be that surprised because I think that team, you know, when the St. John's Maple Leafs left there in 2005, it wasn't a case of, you know, the market being poor or anything like that. It was just that the Leafs wanted to have their AHL franchise closer to home in Toronto. But it's been a rousing success so far. I believe they've played 11 home games now, and they've sold every single one of them. Oh. And the team is also, I believe they dipped down to second overall in the AHL, but they're right among the league leaders. So, I mean, it's been a great success story. I mean, there's obvious challenges that come with the, you know, having that city. I mean, for example, if the Jets injure, somehow a player gets injured in a morning skate, I'm not sure if he could make it to Winnipeg in time for a game is a quick example that comes to mind, and things like that. But it's an enthusiastic hockey market, and I think it's a good place for players to play. I mean, I think they're enjoying themselves there.
Chris, we want to get your opinion on Sidney Crosby. I think he had 20 points in the first period last night. Are you surprised at how well he's come back and you know, shown that he can basically pick up where he left off? Are you surprised at how well he's played?
You know, I am a little bit. I mean, you hate to be in a position where you're underestimating Sidney Crosby just based on what he's done so far in his career. But I think with him having not played a game since January and only returning this week, I mean, there was that unknown about what we'd be seeing. And I think by that goal he scored 5 minutes into the mm-hmm. first game there against the Islanders, you know, I think he made a pretty strong statement about, you know, his, you know, where he's at. And I think maybe it showed that it was a wise decision on his part, because there were some whispers that maybe he was being a little too hesitant with his comeback. I mean, I believe he was cleared for contact a good month or so before he actually did get back to playing games, which is pretty unusual. But I think he was committed to coming back, you know, when he was at 100%. And, you know, based on 3 games so far, I think you have to conclude he's right back there again. And a lot of people expect him to challenge for the scoring title, even though he's 20-odd points out and, you know, missed for 20 games. But I wouldn't put it past him based on what we've seen this week.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Chris Johnston of the Canadian Press. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Jets Bruins gets underway at 6 o'clock tonight. Chris, you know, news leaked yesterday that the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan has decided not to sell their stake in Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Do you believe they were ever really serious about selling, or were they sort of just trying to gauge the market and what they could potentially get for the Leafs?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think they were serious in that they would have sold had they got the bid that they were looking for. But I mean, we're talking, you know, north of $1 billion. There's not very many companies that are able to afford that, or groups that were able to put that kind of money together. And I think that's why they withdrew the bid, because, you know, there were a lot of rumors floating around in Toronto about this sale, because, you know, Teachers is not really, as you might imagine, not particularly a popular owner among Leaf fans is there's kind of the perception, I think, that they're happy making all the money they do on sort of the business that is the Maple Leafs. You know, that's selling condos now. There's a sports bar that's quite successful they've built beside the stadium here in Toronto, but maybe not as committed to winning in that. So I think that there's a lot of interest here in who might buy that team and what they would want from it. I just don't see a lot of companies out there that can afford it. So I think that they were putting it for sale in really hoping that they would get a bid that would blow their socks off and you know, allow them to sell it. But I don't think in this economy that there really is someone who's willing to pay that much money, because who knows, maybe this brand is tapped out at this point with everything that they've done. Maybe there's not a lot of ways to create new revenue around this franchise. So, you know, maybe now that they've stopped selling it, maybe someone will come in with a bid and they'll sell it again. But I don't know. It's still making money for them in the meantime.
Chris, is there any truth to Eddie Belfour having made a $1 billion bid?
No truth to that whatsoever, although he was here right on the Hall of Fame weekend a week or two ago in his leather bomber jacket, so maybe he was trying to get a group together at that point, but no truth to that rumor.
Segueing into goalies, I guess, that way, Chris, Ryan Miller was run over by Milan Lucic last week, and it's obviously been much talked about in the hockey world. Do you see a reaction by the GMs in the league to limit goaltender contact, similar to how the NFL treats their quarterbacks?
I actually do see that happening, and I was a bit surprised by that, because that incident happened, I believe, 2 or 3 days before an NHL General's Managers meeting, and I was surprised by how many GMs, you know, basically were against that hit. And, you know, Lucic contended, and the reason he wasn't suspended is that he didn't do it on purpose. He was chasing after the puck, and, you know, it was more of a collision than a body check, if you know what I mean. And, you know, to me, that was always my understanding of the rule book, is when a goalie ventures out of his net, he's kind of fair game to a degree. I mean, you can't, I don't think, line him up on purpose, but if he's part of contact, I always thought that was fine. But I think you get a case here where there's only so many elite-level goalies, and you could probably argue Ryan Miller was struggling this year, but he's still in the top 10 anyway in the world. And to have a player like that out, I think, is a tough blow for a team. So a lot of GMs basically want no contact. And, I mean, there's been no official change to the rule book, but I think the message is pretty clear that goalies, you know, aren't fair game when they venture out of the goal, which, again, I was personally surprised, because I didn't think so many GMs would think that way. But I think a lot of them are just concerned about what they do if they lost their number one goalie, because for most teams, if you look around the league, the difference between number one to number two is pretty big. Mm-hmm. And you lose a lot of games if you don't have that number one guy in there.
Chris, Edmonton Oilers rookie forward Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has got 24 points in 22 games. He's leading all rookies. He's 11th in the entire league in points. Why aren't we hearing from all of those critics about how Ryan Nugent-Hopkins shouldn't be in the NHL right about now?
I think they're trying to go back and, you know, delete the articles they wrote and everything that they said. Because,
yeah.
I mean, that was a strong sentiment, you know, and I have to profess my focus is mainly on the NHL, and so I don't see a lot of these players play in junior, but I didn't sort of expect, just with all the talk among scouts and even the Oilers. I was in Minnesota when they drafted him in June, and very measured about what they said. They kind of, in fact, you know, if you had asked me June 25th or whatever it was he was drafted, I would have predicted he would start back in Red Deer in the WHL this year, just based on the difference in the way they treated drafting him and Taylor Hall. But he's been a real, you know, surprise. You know, I spoke to Steve Tambellini earlier this week, and they said basically they told him to be himself and they let him make the decision for himself. And clearly he's the team's leader in points so far and one of their best players. And he's starting to even earn much bigger minutes from Tom Rennie, which I think is sort of an indication of, you know, that he's a key part of this team already, even at 18 years old, and he looks like he's about 11 or 12. So he's playing good enough to warrant that spot, and I don't think many people forecasted that.
Well, the Oilers must be doing something right. They went into Minnesota last night and really beat up the Western Conference leading Minnesota Wild.
It's true, and I think that's their first win there in about 5 or 6 years. So, I mean, you know, that's a good indication for them. I mean, there's a number of surprise teams. I mean, if you look across Canada, even the one in your city, I don't think, you know, around the people expected much, but the Jets have been playing well, obviously, here in Toronto. The Leafs have been exceeding expectations. The Senators haven't been too bad. And then teams like Vancouver, you know, after last year's Stanley Cup, aren't doing so well. So, I mean, it just goes to show everything you think you know, then you watch 2 months of the season and things change pretty quickly. So,
Chris, we'll let you go on this one final question. It's a two-parter. The first part is, have you been blocked on Twitter by Brian Burke or Ron Wilson? And the second part is, you know, with the Leafs so obsessive, seemingly so obsessive about controlling the message, is Burke and Wilson's presence on Twitter sort of a way of softening the edges around the organization, or is it just another way that they're trying to control messaging?
Well, I'm not blocked by either. I'm sure neither of them are following me either, and they probably don't care what I have to say anyway. But, there's been a real change around the Leafs, I've noticed, this season in terms of really buckling down on a lot of things. And obviously, the debate about when the Toronto Star reporter Dave Feshchuk phoned James Reimer's mom and wrote a story about it became a big to-do here. And they are trying to control the message more than I can remember in the last few years. And I think, if you look at the way Brian Burke, it's unclear because he's only been on about a week now on Twitter and hasn't truly shown what kind of tweeter he's going to be. But with Ron Wilson, he mostly just seems to be on there to chirp his players and Colby Armstrong go back and forth a fair bit. And I think that they're just joining in the circus so far. They haven't really pushed the message as far as I've seen, but who knows where it'll go down the road. I mean, there's been some speculation that Burke might not even be controlling his own Twitter page. It might be something from within the organization. But we'll have to see what he says and when he says it moving forward to get a sense of that, I think.
Chris Johnston of the Canadian Press, @ReporterChris on Twitter, right?
Exactly.
There you go. Chris, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me. Anytime, guys.
Thanks Chris.
A lot, Chris. See you on Twitter. I'll be the guy that's tweeting you every 2 minutes.
Okay, sounds good.
Take care, Chris. Let's head to break. That was Chris Johnston of the Canadian Press. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to our guests so far, Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, and Chris Johnston from the Canadian Press. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download both on iTunes, search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and also, it's available on the tsn.ca/Winnipeg website. Mm-hmm. Just look in the podcast section, and you'll be able to download it from there. And, of course, on the TSN Winnipeg iTunes page as well. It's pretty much just search for us anywhere. You're just going to...
Yeah.
Ezzy will hand-deliver the show to you on a CD-ROM.
Yeah, or a CD-ROM or a floppy disk.
Really?
Remember floppy disk?
3.5 floppy drive?
I want to say something right now. We just ran into Rick Ralph. He's doing some prep. He'll be doing the pregame show. He does the postgame show, of course, here on TSN 1290. When are we going to have Rick on Illegal Curve, Drew? You're the director of corporate communications.
That's right, Drew, you are.
When are you going to make it happen?
It needs to happen.
I'll see if we can get Rick on for next week. Is that good for you guys?
What about Charlie Sheen? When are we having him on?
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, he doesn't. I don't even know if he's a hockey fan. That was weird. Sorry. Let's continue.
Let's go around the NHL to talk about some of the news and notes that have made news, as it happens, this week.
That was well put.
Thank you. I'm a real wordsmith, aren't I? Don't play Boggle with me. I'll dominate.
I love Boggle.
I know. Yeah, I knew you had a Boggle story.
Oh, Boggle is just terrific. I don't have a Boggle story. Who has a Boggle story? You sit around a table, you have a Diet Pepsi, and you play Boggle.
That the tractor story?
There's no Boggle stories. The story, Drew, is Boggle. You're playing Boggle. And then what is it?
Tim, do you have a Boggle story?
NHL News and Notes clip.
Oh.
That'll be good. Go with that.
NHL News and Notes.
Let's start.
Notice that Tim has a low tolerance for our shtick.
I have a low tolerance for our shtick, too, and I'm the one involved in the shtick. So what does that have to say? As we spoke about with Chris Johnston a couple minutes ago, The Ontario Teachers' Pension Plan has decided not to sell their stake in Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Surprised by this decision?
Why would they sell? I mean, you have this team's been absolutely awful since the lockout. The lockout limited cost spending. There's some revenue sharing, but you're not spending $70 million on salaries anymore. And this organization, this pension plan, is making money hand over fist. Why are they going to sell? Maybe the Leafs are ever good. They'll make even more money. You want to gauge the market, see what it's worth, and then you likely want to keep it, unless you get blown out of the water by an offer. But that wasn't going to happen. It's so much money that you're so limited who can buy it.
Right.
And even then, Tannenbaum had that first right of refusal, right? So I thought it wasn't much to do about nothing. But I think they made it out to be a little bit more than it was.
Especially with a price tag exceeding $1 billion, which doesn't really sound, I mean, I know, granted, it's not just for the Leafs. It's for all Maple Leaf sports entertainment and all their properties.
Like the Raptors, soccer. And every team that's never been good.
That's right. If you're a poor performing team.
And you sell a lot of tickets and you make a lot of money.
Then the Maple Leaf sports and entertainment wants you.
That's right.
Yeah. Their condos, probably poorly selling. Poorly built, poorly selling.
Apparently that sports bar beside the arena is very nice. Though.
Now, which sports bar is that?
This is the, what's it called?
You fancy, I mean, no, your dream one day is to live in Toronto.
Our friend in Toronto told us it's, I forget the name of the sports bar, but apparently it's just incredible.
Can't be anywhere near real sports.
That's what it is.
Is it real sports?
Yeah, that's, they own it.
Oh, I didn't realize.
They opened it in the parking lot, they own it, yeah.
Oh, well, Real Sports won the award for best sports bar
in
America.
Yeah, they own it, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize, I thought Real Sports was in
it. No, they're doing that and the condo, and so they own everything now. They actually own Ezzy.
They bought Ezzy. Not expensive, but poorly performing.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm like those condos in Toronto. They're not selling.
Yeah,
I mean,
not selling. Poorly built.
I've put myself out there. I've done the marketing, but I'm still on the market. So let's try to improve that somehow.
I want to see if you can use the word marketing again in that sentence. That was impressive.
Hey, I'm in the business, Drew.
You guys, as you were on your way back from Grand Forks, you were BBMing with me, and you said you want to put the NHL CBA agreement in this conversation.
Yeah, I think so, because
and the NBA lockout.
This morning, the NBA lockout ended, for the most part. They think it's going to get ratified.
Yep.
And now, I guess within the last 6 months, Drew, you've had baseball, NBA, and NFL all settle.
Sure.
So, I mean, NBA...
Shockingly, baseball was so... People didn't even know they were negotiating.
When everybody's making money, you settle. That's how it works. Everybody's making money, you settle. Yep. So the NBA is going to lose 16 games. Clearly, nobody wanted to imitate the NHL, miss an entire season.
Which I'm surprised about personally. I thought they were going
to
be... They were going to lose that season.
There's money to be made, and if there's money to be made... So that shows that the NHL, obviously, a lot of money wasn't to be made, but also that their stubbornness took over. In any event, I think what this shows you is the NHL needs to start getting to the table and start negotiating right now and get something done. Because you can't miss games. It's not big enough in the States to miss games. And I just think that this just points to the fact how important it is to be amongst the four teams, have labor security for at least 5 years.
Harmony.
And harmony, and do not allow this to become a topic of conversation.
That's right. Do it like
the
baseball.
Players have
just
done okay. The owners are doing, for the most part, okay. I mean, some cities they aren't.
If the NHL was to go down a contentious road, what would be on the table?
Contentious? Okay, and this is...
Higher revenue sharing, probably.
Yeah, the news came out today...
Higher revenue sharing amongst the owners? So what does that have to do with the players, really? Unless you're asking unless you're going to put more money into... Look, they're already putting money into escrow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
So, I mean, what more... Like, are they not going to put... How much more money can they put into escrow?
Something really wrong with the system right now.
The NHL...
I think there's the weak... The teams... honestly, the cities that probably shouldn't, quote-unquote, have hockey...
Well, the issue is... The biggest issue is going to be... And it's leading into that, to what Drew's just saying... The teams like Florida Dallas now, but Florida...
Dallas is secure with ownership.
Right, sure. And they're bringing guys back. But Florida and whatever other teams, Islanders, things like that, teams that don't have a lot of attendance or are losing a lot of money, the question is, can they continue to afford, especially a team like the Islanders, who is exempt because they're in a big market from revenue sharing, can they afford to continue to spend to the salary floor because they're not making enough money to spend that money? So the system is broken in that sense, but as you mentioned, Drew... It's also tied. That's more of an ownership issue because it's tied to revenues than the numbers.
That's right.
So the problem
salary cap is tied to revenues right now.
The problem is, and capitalism, a lot of the bigger teams
make too
Canadian
much money.
Teams make too much money,
and that's what's driving it up for the weak sisters of the NHL. That's what makes the Floridas.
That's an ownership issue. Unless you want to limit the tie to revenue and you cut out the players, the players don't get this much of a cut. Was it 54%?
I think so. Yeah.
The players get 50%. That lowers.
So the only thing that could potentially be a topic of conversation is really what the topic of conversation was about for the NBA.
That's right.
Which is percentage of revenue and how it's split amongst owners and players.
Right.
And in the NBA, coming into this lockout, I believe it was 57% going to the players, 43% going to the owners. Now it's 50-50 after this supposed agreement that still needs to be ratified.
It's basketball-related income.
BRI, so HRI, hockey-related income.
So wouldn't the thought process be for the NHL owners that they would like their share of that revenue to be equal to the NBA?
Right. That's very exactly right.
I think
expect 50-50.
There's a huge... And there's reason to believe that there won't be a work stoppage for the simple fact that the issue isn't as highly contentious as in 2004.
Hard
in
cap.
2004, as Drew opens his iced tea that Tim got him during the break.
You owe him 50 cents, by the way.
Yeah, you owe Tim 50 cents, Drew. The issue is way less contentious, and let me finish that thought. I got distracted by the rude cracking of Drew's can.
Drew, come on, man.
It was the hard cap in 2004, and the players didn't want it, and the owners did, and the arguments could be made that everyone lost in 2004.
Yeah.
There was a season that wasn't played, and we had to watch that ridiculous amount of televised poker.
That was a lot.
And
Weren't you in a basketball draft for the first time ever that year?
I won that draft.
The owners got the salary cap, but the players got the less unrestricted free agency
years. That's right. And there's one wild card here. Donald Fehr.
I was going to say. And he is
smarter than Saskin.
He's the Maverick.
Better at what he does. Smarter. Better than Saskin at what he does. Certainly better than Saskin. Certainly better than Billy Hunter.
Yeah.
And so the issue is, not any better than baseball. But.
And he's not afraid to go down a contentious road if need be. But, they're not going to repeal the salary cap.
No, that's in place.
It's in place. You're not getting rid of the salary cap.
The issue is going to be over the split.
The revenue.
Yeah.
And right now it's 54-46.
I think is that what it is?
I think that's what it is.
Closer 54, to 50-50, right?
Well, you know what? I can't, 54-46 with a big percentage going into escrow at the moment. How much more can the owners want? I mean, honestly, they could try 50-50.
I mean, your point is probably if the teams can't succeed in where they are, they shouldn't be there.
That's largely what it boils down to. If you can't make money under this current system, you probably don't deserve to have a hockey team. You're probably in a...
That would probably take out 15 teams then.
You know what? It would take off half a dozen and the hockey would be a hell of a lot better.
It's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen.
Unless the rosters increase.
Well,
because the players aren't going to give away jobs unless they can add roster spots.
Of course. We know that. But, the truth is, the superstars are making money. They're making $8 million a year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The average salary has increased. People should, for the most part, be happy. The only issues that I can see being in play are the percentage split, like we've spoken about, and the escrow.
That's right.
That's about it. And if you can't come to an agreement on those...
And a couple others on... The term of deals is going to have to be limited.
A cap.
You mean you can't have these 11-year contracts?
You have to term, maximum 6 years, something like that. These are too long. Okay. And it limits player movement, and you can try and circumvent. I know they've addressed the circumvention to an extent. That needs to be limited. So something like that. And I think...
But I can't see that being a difficult sticking point for the most part.
Yeah, but that needs to be addressed, though.
Yeah, so instead of paying a guy 11 years, $77 million, you pay him 6 years, $42 million.
Sure, exactly.
So $7 million bucks a year.
And Bill Simmons writes about this all the time, and I've said it for a while now, for years on this show. You have to limit the contracts to maximum 5 years, maybe?
As an owner, you're kind of foolish to do anything else, given all the unknowns that can come into play.
We spoke about this years back on the show, speaking about the Ovechkin. We said on this show, what if Ovechkin tears his knee up and you got him for 11 years?
Yep.
Well, he hasn't torn his knee up, but maybe he isn't the same player. And if he isn't the same player, which I think he still probably is, but if he isn't, then you have him for 11 years of this deal. So they've done it to themselves, and the players obviously should and will take the money. But for the fan, we'd like to see shorter-term deals, maybe more incentive
player
for the players.
Player movement is exciting.
That's right.
Yeah, and guys, obviously, Mario Lemieux and Ray Shearer were listening to us because they didn't sign Sidney Crosby to 11 years, did they?
Ezzy, let me ask you this. If Ovechkin is on a four-year deal when he signed his deal, and say he's in his last year of his contract right now, you think he's playing this bad?
Probably not.
Probably not.
He has the security right now that they know they can't do anything about it.
Doesn't help. The fans lose on that.
That's right. So player movement's exciting, and you'll see more player movement as a result in the NBA. Apparently that's one of the things
good
that's going to be in their CBA. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Legal Curve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm Drew Mandel, the host of this fine program, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Puck drop for the Jets-Bruins tonight at 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, Shane Knighty, Rick, and Brian Munns have the call.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
What?
Nothing.
What, tonight's game?
I was just talking about that. Rick Ralph gets the pregame show, the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show underway at 5 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless join us, or join live from
BC. They're joining us at the end. We're going to talk
about have him on for the last couple
about
minutes.
About the F grade.
Exactly right.
If you aren't aware, this week Lawless gave the Jets an F grade on TSN, and he's been getting a lot of slack for it, so we thought we'd discuss it with him. It was spoken about yesterday on HNL. We heard it on our drive to UND.
Yeah, and they also talked about how Drew gave me an F for my performance on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show thus far this season. And I think that's a little bit unfair. I slept in last week by accident. It was my alarm, and I maintain that I went to bed early.
Yeah, and that alarm woke us up this morning.
But I mean, Drew, did you really have to give me an F?
Well, you heard the alarm this morning.
Oh, my God. How did you sleep through it? It's so annoying.
Really?
It was. I had to yell at him to turn it off. He's like, nope, not till we get up. I'm not turning it off. Yeah,
Richie, we had this plan. We stayed at AP's house. Richie's brother, he has a place in UND. He goes to school down there, as you know, Drew. And, you know, we had this plan to get up early. I set my alarm for 7:30. Oh, Richie couldn't get up. It was too early for Richie. And then all of a sudden at 8 o'clock, he's telling me to hurry up. I mean, it was terrible communication, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, we're getting James Gordon on the line right now, so we'll have him on momentarily.
Yep.
And he's from the Ottawa Citizen. The Jets play the Senators.
Yeah, this is the first
Tuesday.
This is the first time a Canadian team's in Winnipeg since the Habs?
Since the Habs, yes. Yeah. Since the Habs. We have James.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program. He's a good friend of ours. He's James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. James, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Good to be here. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you very much.
Sorry about that, James. I tripped over the telephone cord, and I don't know what happened there.
You guys are old school there in Winnipeg still.
That's the only way we like it. Classic. Yeah. James,
yeah, classic. That's the word.
James, the Sens are 10-10-2 so far this season, which is probably a better record than many people have expected. What's the mood in Ottawa about this team?
It's kind of mixed, to be honest. You know, you have sort of these, I guess, factions of fans where some people really want the team to go, you know, dive full into the whole rebuild thing, which I think is what the team was intending to do when they made all the moves around the trade deadline last year and then gave some kids some shot at the roster this season. And but, you know, the fact the team is 500 at this point in the season and they've just been through some tough road games and they're still pulling through has some people thinking, you know, maybe if they can hang around the sort of outside of the playoff conversation that maybe they could, you know, add a forward or something and try to make a run at it. So I think nobody really still knows here at the quarter mark what to think about this team.
James, Jason Spezza has been pretty impressive so far this year. I guess it kind of points back to your comments on the first question. Has his strong play made him more tradable, considering, you know, he makes $7 million a year, and which is a fair amount, but he's, you know, at times been fairly dominant. Is it on the table and maybe expected for this team to shop him if they tail off?
You know, I'd be really, really surprised if they did do that. Because, I mean, if you look around the league right now, there's a lot of teams that could use a decent playmaking number one center, and especially one with okay size. Not that he throws it around too much, but he's a strong player. And, you know, it's tough to come by. So I think Jason Spezza, when they gave him a letter here, and you know, Daniel Alfredson's could be retiring as soon as the end of the season. He's sort of seen as the next main leader of this team. And, you know, if they really fell off the face of the earth, you might hear some chatter about that. But I just can't see that happening because he's just such a key part of the team right now. And you look at their forward depth, and especially at center, you know, there was a big debate at the beginning of the season about who would fill that spot. And Stefan DaCosta's had a shot here. He's a rookie. And, has not done too much with it. Peter Regan, who is another guy, got hurt, and obviously he's not able to fill that role. And rookie Mika Zibanejad was sent back to Sweden after 9 games or 10 games, you know, because he obviously wasn't ready. So the team doesn't really have any centers to speak of. So if you're going to send the one guy who's a legitimate NHLer at the center spot, well, I shouldn't say NHLer, but a legit top six NHLer, then you're really throwing yourself under the bus, I'd say.
James, Colin Greening is a Senators forward who's managed to, you know, work his way into a top six role. How impressive has his play been so far? I mean, he's a guy that kind of has developed. He's a little bit older than some of the guys you've mentioned before, especially Zibanejad, who was sent down as an 18-year-old, but he's a guy that came out of the college hockey, U.S. college hockey system.
Right, and his biggest asset is what I talked about before, is size, mm-hmm. because he's a really gutsy player. He loves to go to the front of the net, and he's hard to move. They call him the cyborg here because he's so dedicated to the gym, and the guy's just ripped. So he's a huge guy. He likes to use his size, and that's something the team needs. And, you know, like, the thing with him, too, is just toughness. Like, a couple of days ago at practice, he takes a slap shot off the forearm from Jason Spezza, and you can see he's in horrible pain, and afterward he said he couldn't even feel his hand, but he's like skates hunched over back to the front of the net to take more shots, and he's still holding his arm at the time. So it kind of gives you an idea of how much he wants to be here and how much abuse and how hard he's willing to work to stay here.
James, you mentioned that this is looking like it could be Daniel Alfredson's last season. Is there any possibility he would want to be traded so that he can have a shot at the Stanley Cup?
You know, that's kind of the big debate here. And you know, so far he said that that wouldn't interest him, but he, you know, talked about, you know, that could change later in the season. And, I mean, I think it's a legitimate question for him because if you look at his contract, he drops from a pretty substantial salary this year down to $1 million next year. And given some of the health problems he's had the last couple of years, the concussion this year and some back issues last year, you know, does he want to go through the grind of another season for $1 million? And that's a lot of money for a lot of people, but, you know, it's all relative. So, you know, it's still sort of undecided what he's going to do there. But, you know, I think the conversation would sort of shift depending, again, on where the team is. I mean, if they have a sniff at the playoffs, they aren't going to move Alfredson, and he's not going to have to be moved. And if they're not, then maybe he reevaluates and says, you know, I don't want to leave here without winning the big one. So I guess that's another wait and see. If the team is making things not easy on the long-term decision front this year.
Yeah, they might have been better off tanking it, then there wouldn't be very many questions at all. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. Jets Bruins gets underway at 6 o'clock tonight. We're joined by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. The Jets play the Senators Tuesday night back at home, their first meeting since an earlier game in Ottawa.
James, I certainly wasn't against the experiment of trying to see what the team could get out of Nikita Filatov. What has gone right or what hasn't gone wrong with this experiment?
Well, I mean, it's obviously I was sort of in the same camp where I thought it was a decent gamble for them to make. It's a third round pick. Mm-hmm. You're not probably, unless you get really lucky, not going to get someone who's going to step in and be a star, and certainly not right away. And this is a former number 6 overall pick who, mm-hmm. you know, the press was sort of that he didn't get to play the role he was used to, I guess, in Columbus when they were very defensively minded. So I guess the idea was bring him here, see if they can open it up a bit and let him play his game. But his work ethic and you know, his willingness to do what the coaches were asking earlier in the season got him demoted. And as of today, he's still in Binghamton AHL. And I know he has a meeting coming up with Brian Murray, who told him, you know, go down there, work hard, and we'll talk at the end of November. And, you know, if they decide they're going to give him another shot, he'll be up here to try and stick. And otherwise, it looks like he's going to be going to the KHL. So, you know, and that's kind of been the MO on Filatov. You know, is he willing to do and play the way coaches want him to play in the NHL? And so far the answer has been no. Could that still change? Yes. But I think the countdown's on for his NHL career here.
James, a lot of talent on the back end, especially young talent for Ottawa. Can you speak? We know Erik Karlsson's really turned into, and you've spoken highly about him, and he's turned into a heck of a player. Can you speak a little bit about the development of Jared Cowan and then maybe some of the troubles that David Rundblad's faced adjusting to the NHL game?
Right. Well, Cowan, you know, he's, and I think I've maybe mentioned this before with you guys, but he's a very simple type of player. Like, he does not have a complicated game. He's a big guy. He plays a defensive game, and he's got NHL size right now. And if he can continue to play that game and you know, try and develop into the shutdown guy back there, then he'll continue to get chances. And I think the issue with Rundblad is just it's a big adjustment. He came from Sweden, where he obviously excelled, and he was the go-to guy. And he's been in and out of the lineup this year because he just You know, he's not making great decisions all the time with the puck in his own end and in his defensive coverage. And, you know, you see flashes of brilliance from him. I mean, he had this one pass this year. It was just a long bomb from right beside his own net to the opposing blue line for a breakaway. And, you know, he has that vision, and you can see it. It's just a matter of minimizing some of the mistakes that drive the coaches nuts in his own end.
A lot of people in Winnipeg know who Paul McLean is. He obviously played for the Jets back in the days of Dale Hawerchuk, and then a lot of people, you know him from being the assistant coach with the Detroit Red Wings. We want to ask you about his coaching philosophy, I guess. What is that coaching philosophy, and how have the Senators players really adapted to it and responded to the philosophy that, you know, he's brought to Ottawa?
Well, I mean, you know, he came in with sort of a reputation as a puck possession guy, and you know, that's sort of how the Detroit system is described. You know, they like to play the puck, they like to move, and, you know, if you asked him, I think it would come down to two words: go fast. And he has these guys skating a lot, almost every day, and he expects players to you know, be fast, go to the net, go do the things that they need to do to keep the other team on their heels, rather than, you know, some of the trapping that we've seen. And I know everybody probably is aware of what was going on with Philly and Tampa a couple weeks back, but the philosophy here is to be aggressive and really try and force mistakes by always being aggressive and in their face. So the players, I think, have responded. I mean, most people, like we mentioned before, we're picking this team to be last, and they're 500 at this point. So obviously the players are buying in. I think there was a little physical adjustment at the start of the year because a lot of these guys hadn't been skated like that in, you know, probably since junior. So, you know, I think there was some buy-in there, but he seems to have the respect of the players because he's willing to listen to them and get their input. So all around, it's been good so far. Obviously, things can change. I mean, Corey Clouston started out really well here, and things kind of fell off the cliff there.
Again.
But the difference with Paul McLean is he's not as abrasive, and I think he's willing to listen to the players rather than try and be the general.
James, last question. We'll let you go on this one. Tell us something positive about the Craig Anderson-Alex Auld goaltending combination.
I think that you can see certain flashes of the Craig Anderson who got another young team into the playoffs by being stellar. And you see that some games. You saw it the last sort of week and a half when the team was out west and they had a game against Toronto where he was really great and you know, arguably kind of sold one. So you see the old Craig Anderson there sometimes, and then occasionally you're getting these kind of uncharacteristic blow-ups. So Alex Auld is never going to be the guy here, no matter how much Anderson struggles. And if ever it came down to an injury, I think they would call Robin Lehner up, who's in the minors and is their goalie of the future. But, you know, your comment says it all. The team is going to go as far as Craig Anderson can take them, and if he can pick it up, they will continue to play 500 or better hockey. And if he has a lot of games like the last one, then this team isn't going to go too far.
James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, thanks again for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Not a problem, guys.
Take care, James. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Let's head to break. When we come back, more from around the NHL. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290.
It's Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. Before him, Chris Johnston of the Canadian Press and our good friend Dennis Bayak of TSN Jets. You can hear Dennis, Shane Knighty, and Brian Munns today at 6 o'clock. They'll have the call of the Jets-Bruins game. The official Winnipeg Jets pregame show gets underway at 5 o'clock with our good friend Rick Ralph. And Hustler and Lawless follow us live from the Grey Cup in Vancouver at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
They have a riot planned.
Hustler and Lawless are rioting?
No, the people of Vancouver have a riot planned for after the game, regardless if they win or lose.
This segment is brought to you by Carbone, coal-fired pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone, coal-fired pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. I'm going to be a bachelor for a couple nights this week, so it's possible I'm going to be ordering a Carbone coal-fired pizza.
We're gonna hit it up.
Better have us over.
It's going to be a Legal Curve meeting.
Really?
You've had me over once since you went into you bought your million dollar condo.
Yeah, as when you leap from an airplane and land on my balcony, it's not considered me having you over.
And Drew owns a rabid dog.
She's not rabid. She's adorable. Just because she doesn't like you doesn't mean that she's rabid. She's just a good sense of character.
Drew took in a stray dog that bites visitors.
It's not the least bit correct. Absolutely not correct whatsoever.
Let's talk alumni game.
No, I want to talk about the stupidest holdout in the history of the NHL first.
Yeah. Kyle Turris.
Well, hold on. Let Timmy play the clip.
Oh, right. Sorry. Timmy?
NHL news and notes.
That was the clip?
I thought it was going to be the marine biologist clip, to be honest. I forgot about that.
You better play that one, too, Timmy.
Okay, we'll find that one for afterwards.
Drew, I'm getting ready to host for... Ezzy and I are getting ready to host for when you're out of town.
That's not for another, 3 weeks or something.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Kentucky. Where do you think I'm going?
What's in Kentucky?
Well, I have wedding planning to do.
Oh! The wedding planner.
I see.
Yeah, the wedding planner. That's me in a
nutshell. Dress is what dress you're going to wear.
Exactly. How I can repeal your invitation without you knowing.
Straps, Drew, or no straps for you?
No, strapless. I have to show off my ample bosom. Kyle Turris, after holding out really up to this point in the season, signed in Phoenix for 2 years and $2.6 million. Give me one reason why this lockout, holdout happened.
His agent's a fool?
That's one reason.
Needs a new agent? Who's his agent?
I don't know.
Kyle Turris has accomplished with this is he's lost money. He's missed 20 games of salary that he would have earned, which is, based upon his salary, a significant sum of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why he did, I don't know. You can still sign and demand to be traded and play in the meantime. Whether he's alienated himself from the players or not, I'm not sure. I mean, Tyson Nash was on the show a few weeks ago, or a month ago now, and alluded to the players maybe not being unhappy with that. You'll hear other rumblings of players never really getting on other players for contract issues. In any event, he's certainly alienated himself from the organization, specifically Dave Tippett, who's the coach of the team. So, is he there long-term? Likely not. I see a trade on the horizon, whether it's within the next week, within the next couple weeks. I think at some point, I don't think Kyle Turris will be a member of the team by the trade deadline, for sure.
I'm surprised, honestly, that lots of people thought they were just going to sign him and then immediately get him dealt.
Well, no, because then that's contrary to Don Maloney's philosophy, which is you can't demand trades to get out.
So you're going to sign. Kyle Turris's agent, by the way, Kurt Overhart.
What?
Well, no, I've heard of him before. I'm not sure which other clients he has. In any event, he mishandled this process. He completely and totally mishandled it. There's no other way to say it.
And Richie, you're right. He did lose the money, and you can make a strong argument. I would really care more about the money, but he also, he's still relatively young at 21 years old, and he was a high draft pick, but he's lost a significant part of the season and contributing to his development.
In a negotiation, exactly, yes, and that's exactly right, long-term making money.
Yeah.
In a negotiation, when you hold out, you need something that's
leverage.
Called leverage.
Yes.
He had no leverage.
No leverage.
So why?
I've learned something hanging out with Richie all the time.
Kurt Overhart, why he thought there was leverage, and did he imagine leverage? I don't understand him. Did he have a few drinks? I mean, there was no leverage here. He performed pretty well in the minimal amount of time he played last year, but Kyle Turris was a third overall pick, guys. He hasn't turned into the player that he should have become. Remember, I mean, Kyle Turris was in the 07 draft, Drew?
Yep.
2007 draft, Kyle Turris, third overall, right?
After Kane and Van Riemsdyk.
No. Yes, that's right. Okay. Who have the Jets taken third over? The Thrashers, excuse me, took Kane third overall in the draft to Montreal in 09.
Mm-hmm.
Look what he's done already. So, look what he's making. So, and he's coming into his third year, mind you, but where's the leverage there? He hasn't certainly been a guy like Evander Kane. He's a third overall pick. He's taken far too long to develop, or longer than they had thought, maybe not far too long. I just don't understand this from the outset, and I think his agents mishandled it, and I'm surprised. I would be surprised if he kept the same agent, similar to how Vokoun's agent misread the market this summer.
And got fired about an hour after he signed.
Yes.
And also, guys, it's not a secret now, or it hasn't ever really been a secret, that Dave Tippett is a big fan of defensive hockey and his team giving a hard-working effort, not unlike a lot of coaches. And whether or not Kyle Turris didn't want to be in Phoenix because of the fact that his numbers wouldn't be as good in a defensive system is irrelevant. I mean, the fact is the guy wasn't, he was never entitled to a very big contract or a significant raise, was he? I mean, if you look at his numbers in the NHL, they've been pretty average.
Yeah.
So it was a bizarre holdout, and I guess, you know, for the Phoenix Coyotes, I guess they're happy they got it done, but, you know, it was almost a kind of a big waste of everyone's time, really.
That would be pretty much how you can sum it up. It's a bigger waste of time for Kyle Turris than it is for anybody else, I would say.
And if he sat out the whole year, he'd have made no money.
Well,
whatsoever.
He had to sign by December 1st, remember.
Exactly.
That's why he signed.
Yeah,
exactly
right.
Leverage. He had 1 week left to sign. I mean, Phoenix is, you know, still doing okay, ninth place without him. I mean, look, Dave Tippett gets more out of that team than anybody rightfully should.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, that is not a good team, and he keeps having them perform at almost a playoff level. I mean, yeah. I know it's early, but
Guys like Radim Verbata and Lori Korpikoski, guys that have failed on other teams, they buy into Dave Tippett's system. One of the best coaches in the league, for sure.
And we'll see them Thursday night.
That'll be a fun one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a loud one.
Yeah, Phoenix versus Winnipeg, Thursday night.
Let's do alumni before the break.
Let's do the alumni. Okay, so they announced who the alumni are that are going to play in the Winter Classic. Frankly, you know, I'm not a huge Winter Classic guy, but the alumni sort of excite me on this one.
Yep.
Ex-Flyers star Eric Lindros and former Rangers great Brian Leetch. The other Flyers alumni include John LeClair, Mark Recchi, and Rick Tocchet. No truth to the fact that Tocchet has already gambled on the game. They're going to be coached by Pat Quinn. Mike Keenan is coaching the Rangers. Adam Graves, John Van Beesbrook, Mike Gartner.
Beeser better be ready to be pulled.
Yeah, I think he's already been pulled as it happens. Keenan's going with Richter instead.
And Lindros has cleared all tests. He's not experiencing post-concussion like symptoms, so he'll be ready to go.
That's right.
You know, that's going to the alumni game's fun. I'm not surprised Gretzky's not playing in it. Why would he play in the alumni game in Philly? If the game was in New York.
He said he'd probably
And they're
play.
Talking about playing a game in Central Park, which by the way would be unbelievable.
Play for the Rangers for 3 years.
Yeah, well.
So, where would you want him to play?
Richie's getting mad.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Richie's a Gretz. You don't mess with Gretz.
He's an Oiler King alumni.
Well, I don't care.
Those are the teams he played for.
You can play with the Rangers all he wants. You can't play in the St. Louis Blues alumni
Gretzky,
game.
Are you going to ask Gretzky to play for the St. Louis Blues alumni team?
No, I'm not. I mean, you can't play with that one. But tell you what, if they succeed in putting a Winter Classic game in Central Park, and Gretzky will play in that one.
Yeah, he would. Yeah.
He would play in that one in a second.
Yeah.
Because, first, that game would be unbelievable.
And I'll be there eating a falafel.
That's just odd.
No, that
they have falafel stands on every block in New York.
They really should do like an Islanders Rangers game in the middle of Central Park.
I'd watch that.
Be pretty cool. Yeah. Absolutely.
Islanders though?
Yeah, make it a New York thing.
They could play a game at Assiniboine Park.
I think the Islanders would have to change things around for a little while.
And make it Rangers Kings. Get the LA huge markets or Rangers Blackhawks.
Now you're talking. Islanders don't deserve anything at the moment. I would
or maybe Rangers Predators.
That's a lot of history there between the Rangers and the Predators. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, Bruins play-by-play man. He's legendary. He's Jack Edwards. He's going to join us. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290.
It's Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. 30 minutes to go before we turn it over to Hustler and Lawless live from the Grey Cup in Vancouver, British Columbia. And, of course, we have a whole special day of programming in store for you tomorrow, noon to 3 p.m. live from the Grey Cup. And Gary and Andrew will be making, I think, a couple guest appearances. That will be broadcast live from BC Place. 3 to 4, a special edition of Hustler and Lawless, live from the TELUS Street Festival just outside of BC Place. They'll get you up to date on all your late-breaking Bomber news, lead up to the big game. And at 4 o'clock, the best of Grey Cup week, with the best interviews that we have brought to you on this station, starring Joel Marcoux.
There you go.
It's a good show.
Very good show. He's done a good job on there.
Very good show, exactly. And then, of course, win or lose, some extra programming, I believe, coming up Monday morning on the big show. I think they're on 6 a.m. till noon if the Bombers win. So there's some extra programming.
If they lose, they're not on at all?
No, exactly. And they're going to be on at least till 10 a.m.
Talk about the Bombers game because of the fact that we don't want to have to talk about the BC Lions, and we won't, because the Bombers are going to win.
Exactly right.
That's my lock of the week, Drew.
I don't know enough about the CFL, but my only concern here...
Well, hold on. There's three downs. They play in football stadiums, and they use a bigger ball.
Your only concern?
Would you like to know more?
My only concern is that they're playing a road game.
Yeah.
So it's a road game. I mean, it's not a neutral field. I have concerns about that.
That's a reasonable point.
I mean, a neutral field, I think it'd be a close game, but I wonder about their ability to win in BC. Is that still BC Place?
It's still called BC Place. Yep. They haven't bought a sponsor for it yet, as far as I know. I think we can go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins. He's Jack Edwards. Jack Edwards, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Great to be with you. What's the temperature up there?
It's actually not bad. Before last night, there was green grass. We had a snowfall, and then it melted, and then we had a snowstorm overnight. So now it looks like a winter wonderland.
Okay, well, you know, I think I had the chance to go to Winnipeg when that wonderful city hosted the World Track and Field Championships. But I had some kind of a family conflict, so I couldn't go. But I'm going to get my first taste of it in about 2 weeks, I think. So.
Yeah, I think early December the Bruins come to Winnipeg, if I'm not mistaken.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to standing at Portage in Maine at about 10:30 at night with the wind blowing.
Make sure you're just wearing shorts and a very light windbreaker. Otherwise, you might overheat a little bit.
You guys just make fun of us Flatlanders, us Southerners here, you know, way down in the States. I can't wait to be a popsicle up there. I'm really looking forward to it.
Wonderful. We're looking to have you here. Let's start with this Boston Bruins team. It seems like, really, they've been galvanized since Milan Lucic's hit on Ryan Miller. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, you know, I think they were really coming around after the back-to-back losses to Montreal that sort of launched the 10-game winning streak that just ended yesterday. They were all over the place mentally. Maybe the most interesting comment I heard was Tyler Seguin, who's, you know, just 19 years old, saying that emotionally every game in the very beginning of the season meant too much to the Bruins, which is not to say that you shouldn't get up for every single game and be mentally prepared for every single game, but in the course of each game, being a goal ahead or a goal behind produced an exaggerated emotional reaction, and that they weren't centered emotionally after the Stanley Cup win and the short summer. And it finally took a whiff of their mortality to be in last place in the Eastern Conference and to look at 14 teams above them and to know that they hadn't played well for 60 minutes straight more than once or twice in the entire season to get it together. And they really did. But I will say this. The Lucic thing and the whole Buffalo circus did bring them even closer as a team, because it reminded them that that's the way the Bruins play, and other teams sort of pretend to play that way every once in a while, but the Bruins bring that togetherness every single night. It would have been unimaginable for a Bruin, or all five Bruin skaters, not to drop them and go if somebody had tried to run over Tim Thomas that way. And by the way, Tim Thomas would not have gotten run over. Yeah. He would have been proactive. He would have had the waffle out there and probably shaved the guy for him.
Jack, you mentioned Tyler Seguin. Last year, he was, as an 18-year-old, he made the squad. He was in and out of the lineup, and you know, he had his moments, especially against Tampa Bay in the playoffs last year. He's been incredible this year, 23 points in 21 games, basically excelling in almost every facet of the game. Have you been surprised with how quickly he's got that maybe star status already?
Yes, absolutely. He showed a great deal of progress last year, and there are still some holes in his game, but what we've seen from him this year, in addition to the brilliant breakaway dimensional speed, as general manager Peter Chiarelli called it, and the creative vision and the willingness to put himself at risk to make a play in the attacking zone, we see him angling opposing players off in the neutral zone, and when he's providing back pressure, which is a key to Claude Julien's system to keep the gap tight. That kind of maturity, we didn't expect to see this soon. And I would say that what he's showing is that he's ready to move to center if the Bruins choose to wheel somebody. And if they do, I think he's ready to step into that role, and he'll do even better than he's doing right now, which might be a scary prospect for Bruins opponents.
Jack, were you ever concerned that Brad Marchand wasn't going to re-sign, and how would you rate his play thus far this season?
I would rate his play as spotty at first, much better of late. He has remembered who he is and what he is. I really wasn't worried about him re-signing, what I was worried about was that he and his agent had overvalued him, and they thought that he was going to be a big star-type player, one of the primary players on the Bruins. And it's not to say that he's not an important player. Every player is important in his own role. But Marchand is on that second layer of importance. He is not Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, Tim Thomas. He's not at that level. And my fear was that the great playoff success that he produced, and that is all to his credit, might have gotten to his agent's head and to his head. But, you know, the guy signed, he shows up, he puts up some of the best numbers in fitness training at the very beginning of camp, which laid to rest any fears that anybody had that he was enjoying himself a little too much this past summer, which was the big scuttlebutt. That was the big rumor. And he has really, really been good the last 2.5, 3 weeks or so.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Boston Bruins play-by-play man, Jack Edwards. Jack, Joe Corvo has joined this team, and he's more or less come in as the replacement for Thomas Caberle. Has he been an upgrade over the brief period of time that Caberle played in Boston?
Different kind of player. Caberle is a disher, and I would look at Corvo more as a shooter. I think Corvo's a little bit stronger rushing the puck. The hardest thing for both of those guys we're talking about is that Claude Julien's defensive system is a zone system. And the vast majority of NHL teams play man-to-man, especially when you get close to the goal. But given the kind of personnel that Boston has, especially with Zdeno Chara and Dennis Seidenberg, who are really their one and two guys, Boston plays a zone system where they give up the perimeter. They will allow players to go to the corners in order to deny them entry into the house. And Corvo's had a hard time sorting that out, as many players who come into Boston's system do. Also, his productivity was very limited in the first 10 games or so because, being a right shot, he was playing on the right side. And it's only recently that they have moved him on the power play to the left side. Mm-hmm. So his shot is in the middle, and he's coming toward the puck. It's my guess, and I think the guess of a lot of people around the team, that his goal scoring stands at zero, mostly because the Bruins don't have a left shot who sets up on the right half wall during the power play, who is the natural feeder for a right-hand shot coming off the left point, which is Corvo. And when they lost Mark Savard, you know, and Corvo didn't overlap with Savard, obviously, by a long stretch. But when the Bruins lost Savard, they never replaced him with a left-handed disher, and they still don't have one. And that probably is the single attribute that is the most glaring omission from Boston's power play. And it wouldn't be surprising if the right guy comes along and is available in a trade near the deadline. It wouldn't be surprising if Peter Chiarelli made a move for that kind of player.
Interesting points, Jack. You know, in baseball, you have Nolan Ryan coming back to the Texas Rangers and kind of molding maybe the framework of the state of mind of the team, and the pitchers can go longer, et cetera, et cetera. Cam Neely's come back to the Bruins. Do you think he's had a similar effect on the style of play and the attitude of the organization and the players?
There is no question that Cam Neely has made each and every player accountable to the legacy of the Boston Bruins. And it's kind of interesting that Neely himself never won a Stanley Cup as a player, although he was as good a leader as we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. He also had the good fortune to have his entire Bruins career coincidental or concurrent with that of Ray Bourque, who, if you want to make an argument about who are the best two defensemen in the NHL, they both possibly could be Boston Bruins. You know, I know there's a lot of people who think that Lidstrom belongs alongside Orr, and I'm certainly willing to listen to that argument. But Bourque is certainly in your top two pairs. and it's nice that Neely had that his entire career, which gave him stability. But he has made the Bruins accountable to the legacy of the team. And the legacy of the team is that even if you don't get the 2 points, leave some teeth on the ice. Make everybody know that you have had your blood boil in the loss, that you haven't taken it rolling over. And I think that kind of game-in, game-out intensity was occasionally missing before he became the club president. And when he came on, And when he confronts the players, which is very occasionally, because he's a low-key presence, but he's always there, when he confronts the players, man, does he get their attention. And that's only a positive thing.
Jack, earlier in the show, we were talking about some of the better teams that the Jets have played this season, and we basically kind of came to the agreement that the elite teams in the NHL are the Chicago Blackhawks, the Pittsburgh Penguins, you can throw in the Vancouver Canucks, and then obviously the Boston Bruins. What argument could be made for maybe why the Boston Bruins won't repeat as Eastern Conference champions this year?
It's going to be hard to stay healthy for 82 games. That's number one. They've been very fortunate with injuries this year. They haven't lost, knock on wood. You know, here I am tapping on my own head. they've been very, very fortunate that they haven't had a major injury in the first quarter of the season. If Tim Thomas goes down and the load goes totally on Tuukka Rask's shoulders, everybody in the organization believes that Rask can carry that load, but you need a very strong backup because Rask definitely showed signs of wear in the collapse against Philadelphia two seasons ago. And you don't want him going into the playoffs stretched physically. If Chara goes down, all bets are off. He is absolutely the best shutdown defenseman in the NHL. He terrorizes opposing forwards. He is annually voted the toughest player to play against in the NHLPA poll during the All-Star break. And I believe that the last 2 years, a majority of the players with the opportunity to vote for any other player in the league, more than 50% of the players have voted that Zdeno Chara is the toughest player to play against in the NHL. So based on that, you know, if either of those two guys goes down, and you might even now include Seidenberg in that list, all bets are off. And if the Bruins can stay healthy, they are going to make another run. I seriously believe that because this team has an ability to focus that is truly remarkable, but they need their big three defensive guys, Thomas, Seidenberg, and Chara, in no particular order, all to stay 100% healthy.
Jack, last question. We'll let you go on this one. Aside from the thrill of getting to see Shane Knighty four times this season, as he's doing the play-by-play for the Jets now, you know, what's the chatter amongst the Bruins players and organization about the Jets being back in the league?
I say this in all sincerity. We love that Winnipeg is back in the league. And, you know, a few years back, the NHL broadcast meetings were the 2 days before the draft in Ottawa. That was the year the Bruins took Joe Colbert. Mm-hmm. So what was that, 07, 08 maybe? Yeah. I can't really remember.
Yeah.
Every year the NHL shows the best practices video. And they also show the things they don't like. Well, one of the things they showed that they didn't like was my narrative as we panned the lower bowl at Phillips Arena in Atlanta. And, you know, this city had a team long ago, and it left. And they got another one back in expansion. And for an original six team like the Boston Bruins, you see a crowd like this, and you got to wonder if hockey's ever going to catch on in Atlanta. And they ripped me a new one at the NHL broadcast meetings in front of all my peers. Gary Bettman was there. You know, all these guys, the big muckety mucks from the executive office. But you know what? It was the truth. And for hockey to go from the Sun Belt back to a place that lives and dies for the sport, that will support its team come, you know, the most heinous situations of adversity, that will fill the seats and scream and yell and get mad when they lose and celebrate when they win, that puts the roof over my head. That is a beautiful thing. And I think that sentiment is held universally throughout the Boston Bruins organization, that it is great to have Winnipeg back in the league. And I want to see Quebec City get back into the league. I can think of four franchises right off the top of my head that couldn't possibly do worse than the old Colisée while they're building a new rink. Than they're doing in their current buildings in the United States, because the fans in the United States in certain markets just don't care. And that doesn't make them bad cities or bad people. It just means they don't love hockey. So fine, go where they love you. I mean, how hard is that to figure out, right?
A lot harder than you made it sound for Gary Bettman and some of the other tall Absolutely. Forwards in New York. I hope you haven't been holding your breath waiting for an apology from them.
Yeah, it's one of the great jokes around the NHL, you know. It's like, the day they apologize to me, it'll be about 3 days after my body's cold.
Well, when you come to Winnipeg in December, your body might get cold, so here's hoping they apologize 3 days after that.
It's all good, boys. It's all good. I can't wait to get there, and I'm looking forward to tonight's game. I really enjoy Mark Stewart and Blake Wheeler. Really good guys, and looking forward to seeing them again. Hope we get a great game tonight.
Likewise. Jack Edwards, Bruins play-by-play guy, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Jack. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. One final segment on the other side. This is TSN 1290.
It's Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. That was Jack Edwards, play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins.
And that was refreshing.
Yeah. Well, he's got no sacred cows. He doesn't have to toe the company line. He speaks it honest, and he speaks it truth, and, it, you know, that's what it was.
Great interview. One of the best radio voices in the business.
That's right. And, I mean,
and he's on with Nesson. Him and Andy Brickley on Nesson are unreal. Oh, that's a great. I mean, that is.
New England Sports Network for those people who are wondering what Nesson stands for.
Yes, exactly right.
It's huge in Boston.
His call at the end of the game against the Sabres, the rematch this past week, was incredible. The Bruins grab the sword out of Buffalo's hands and run them through with the saber.
Love it.
That's pretty good.
Love it.
That's pretty good.
I don't get it.
We'll explain it to you later. That's not too bad at all. So let's talk about your last couple minutes. Let's talk about your trip down to Grand Forks last night.
Those three things I learned this week.
Well, we're right up against the clock. Let's talk about Grand Forks.
Let's get through it. Okay. Well, let's talk about a couple of the things. We don't have to do that for me. Let's do it quick.
Let's just do it quick.
We went last night down to UND to see. We got Jason Hayter, the PR guy there, set us up, and we had a beautiful spot on the red line.
Yep.
Got to watch UND play Colorado College. Colorado College ranked, I believe, third in the nation. Fourth in the nation here, it says, but third or fourth in the nation. Schwartz brothers. And that's the first thing I want to start with. Jaden Schwartz, who people might be familiar with.
Was it his sister who had leukemia?
Yeah, tragic.
Yeah.
He played, actually, it's nice to see he plays with his brother on a line.
Okay.
Rylan Schwartz.
Yeah.
Undrafted, but I thought quite impressive.
Yep.
Jaden Schwartz, to me, was the best player in the ice, as he
had
the puck. Every time he had the puck, it was dangerous. And it was
a 7-6 final, is that
7-6
right?
7-6 final.
UND exciting won. Game. UND won, we should mention
UND
that.
UND won, yes. Yeah. And just exciting game. We'll have to see the goals. And some of them weren't the best goals, but you saw some real good talent. I mean, you're talking about like 20 to 25 draft picks on the ice last night. The sold out.
Yeah.
Sold out game. Probably 11,500 fans. Sold out game. Great atmosphere. Everybody's got a jersey. People should go down and do it more often.
Yep.
We had a great time.
It's great for like a one night road trip.
You could they play again tonight. You could do two.
Yeah,
sure. They usually play Friday, Saturday night.
Friday, Saturday. Yeah, and a couple of guys we want to talk about. A lot of a couple of players' sons were in the game. We talked about Schwartz.
Yep.
Mike Krushelnicki's kid, Alex Krushelnicki, was in the game last night. He played a pretty solid game. And then
what position does he play?
He plays left wing.
Okay.
I think first off, we should also get into before we get into really some of the standouts, and if we do have time, let's talk about there's two Winnipeg draft picks in last night's game.
Yep. Okay.
And then those were Peter Stojkovic, who played, actually, is from Ravenscourt, went to Ravenscourt in the city. He's a part of the Jets Jets organization, and so is Aaron Harstad.
These guys weren't drafted this past season.
I think they were both signed.
Signed.
Yes. Oh, they're signed. Yes. They're signed UFAs?
Yes.
Okay.
Stojkovic may have been may have been drafted in the seventh round. I'm not sure if he was or not.
Actually, you know what? I think we'll get maybe somebody to correct us on Twitter if they can, or maybe Drew, you can look it up. Pretty sure Stojkovic was drafted by the third
round. Yeah, in the last round, I think it was.
Harstad was signed.
Harstad was for sure signed.
Yeah.
They both played, Stojkovic played a more of a defensive role. In terms of killed some penalties and strong along the boards, and needs some work in terms of his. You know, he's a freshman, so they're always very raw. Needs some work in terms of decision making and some of his puck skills. But he was drafted in 2010.
Okay.
Harstad had his moments as well. It moves pretty well. But both guys, the seventh round pick, 199th overall, was Stojkovic. Both guys are have a long way to go to make make their way to Winnipeg. I'll put it that way. They had their moments, but in both respects. In terms of other guys, Izzy, I thought who were quite impressive. You can see Derek Forbort, first round pick by LA, 15th overall. He was pretty good.
Yep, Forbort was very good. Physical guy, not the most offensive guy, but a guy that I think he's in his third year, right, with UND? Is he?
He's in his second year.
Second year, okay. Yeah. So he's a sophomore.
Danny Christo in Montreal. Yep. Yeah, he stood out the whole game.
Yeah, the first star of the game was Christo, was it not? And then Nelson also. Brock Nelson is a Islanders draft pick, and he got the winning goal. It was a high scoring game, but you know, the Sioux have 15 NHL draft picks, and I believe there was 12 in the lineup, 11 or 12 or something like that.
Yeah. What did you see in Rocco Grimaldi?
He didn't play.
He didn't play. Injured.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He didn't play. That was one guy that we were looking forward to playing. Second round draft pick, high second round draft pick of the Florida Panthers. Very small guy like a Brian Gionta. We were looking forward to seeing because he's got a lot of offensive skill, but he's got that injury. But a lot of talent on both teams.
Sure.
And UND has struggled. Richie and I were talking about this. UND is a perennial Frozen Four. Frozen Four is the tournament that determines the eventual NCAA winner. But North Dakota struggled. They're a young team, but it'll be interesting to see how both of those teams progress. Colorado College is expecting to be in the Frozen Four, but all around a great time.
And probably the nicest arena.
Oh, man.
One of the nicest arenas of all time.
Yep.
Incredible.
Marble floors and leather seats.
They sort of sold their soul to get it built, but that's okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but we'll leave it at that. And you can just Google Ralph Engelstad if you want to know why they sold their soul. But unbelievable arena. And you know what? There is a direct pipeline between UND and the Winnipeg Jets. Yep. I mean, of course, Mark Chipman went to UND.
Jason Gregoire.
And they play here January 7th against Clarkson at the MTS Center.
That's right. I bet you they'll have a decent crowd for that.
Sure, they're advertising like crazy down there.
Yeah, so that'll be a nice
We'll be there.
Exactly, be there. Aren't we everywhere?
I guess so.
Okay, we're pretty much everywhere.
We're omnipresent.
Exactly.
That's true. Good use.
Nice word use of the word.
Ubiquitous.
Exactly. That's it, though, for today. Although, actually, we're going to hang out. I think we're going to join Hustler for a couple minutes.
I don't know anything about the CFL. You guys are going to be talking.
Okay, we'll talk. Well, you can just follow along with us. Big thank you to Dennis Bayak of TSN Jets. You're going to hear him tonight with Shane Knighty and Brian Munns beginning at 6 o'clock puck drop. 5 p.m. is Rick Ralph with the official Jets pregame show. Chris Johnston of the Canadian Press. Big thank you to him. Big thank you to James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. And a big thank you, of course, to Jack Edwards from the New England Sports Network, the Boston Bruins play-by-play man. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download. You can find us on the tsn.ca/Winnipeg website. You can find us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim, I'm Drew Mandel. From our lips to your ears, thanks for listening. Hustler and Lawless live from the Grey Cup are next.